Welcome to It Takes a Village, a podcast for college-bound families by Olin College of Engineering's Admission and Financial Aid team. My name is Dan.
And I'm Alia. It's late April, and that means it's time to make a decision. May 1st is generally the deadline for students to decide which college to attend. The month of April has such a different set of challenges in the college process. Whereas previously, students were submitting applications and waiting for colleges to make decisions, now they are the ones faced with a big decision.
We polled parents of admitted students to ask them the following question. What is your biggest question or concern as a parent about supporting your child during the period between receiving college decisions and making a final choice by May 1st?
We selected the most popular questions and recruited a few experts from our community to answer them. Later, we'll hear from Sally Phelps, Olin's Director of Postgraduate Planning. But first, let's hear what two Olin students, Olivia Jo and Florian, have to say.
And with that, welcome Olivia Jo and Florian. Thank you so much for being on with us.
Howdy. Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
Awesome. So I guess we'll get started. And this first question will go to Olivia Jo. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience of what it was like flying solo into Boston, how you got onto campus? Like, did you have a credit card? How did your health insurance work? But I guess kind of just take us through that process and I guess starting from flying into campus.
Yeah, so I was coming from Southern California. So as my parents joke, about as far as I could get. I'm the first child. So this was my parents' like first experience in getting a kid into college. You know, I was the guinea pig. And I did fly with my mom for the first trip over, because I had actually flown alone for Candidates Weekend. So this flight to Olin was actually me leading the way and showing my mom how to get to Olin. But honestly, taking advantage of Ubers and, you know, I had found out there were a couple other kids from my area also coming to Olin around the same time. So we booked our flights together. So we weren't, I wasn't alone in the airport. And that's something that's held true throughout my Olin time. I've really never gone to and from the airport, leaving or going back to campus, ever being alone. For stuff like credit cards, that I know the summer before, my parents worked on getting me a credit card and starting to get used to using it over the summer, getting my health insurance card and teaching me where to keep and find all of those documents. That was a big part of my summer, learning how to start being on my own and having saved copies of all my documents everywhere. Because I was coming from so far away, it was hard for me to bring a lot of my stuff. So one big thing is like, you're never going to be that far from, you know, Amazon, Target. You can get what you need. You don't need to bring your entire childhood bedroom with you, even though I really, really wanted to. Looking at my room now, I don't know how I'm going to get all this stuff back home ever, because you will end up accumulating stuff during your time at college. You will buy more things, you're going to go visit places, you're going to end up with more stuff than you could possibly need.
And how was that like, you know, you mentioned you're the oldest child in your family, so how was that not only for you but for your family, just thinking about making that transition like as a family and your dynamic?
Yeah, so interestingly, my mom, when I was growing up, used to work 5 days a week, and during my like time in high school, she actually cut down to 2 days a week because she started realizing we were getting old enough, leaving the house. So those past few years in high school, I really got used to my parents always, you know, my mom was always there 3 days a week. I got to spend a lot of time with my family. And then now I'm, you know, it's a 3-hour time difference. And instead of just walking, you know, 2 feet out to go say hi to my mom or my sister, I have to schedule a whole phone call and align time zones and all of that. So it's taken a bit of getting used to in that. I didn't realize how difficult it would be to just, you know, pick up the phone and call. You know, schedules are a thing, and it's a lot harder when you're no longer there and in the mix of it with my family. Yeah, and being the first one, you know, like my sister's still home, like life is still going on without me, and that's a little weird to think about and get used to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another thing you mentioned too of, you know, never being alone in the airport too, like I think sometimes one thing we don't always remember is that you or your child is not the only one going through this, right? So like, I mean, I also went, I went the opposite direction as you. I grew up on the East Coast and went to college on the West Coast. But even here at Olin, I think it's super common. We actually, even though we're located in Massachusetts, both Olivia Jo and Florian at the time were coming from California. And we have more students from California than we do from Massachusetts. So, you know, yes, there's going to be that adjustment period for both the student and the family, but they're not alone in it. You know, they have other people that are going through that and maybe experiencing some of that homesickness sometimes, or growing pains, or excitement, or whatever it might be, you know, together. All right. So Florian, we got a question from a parent that says, my son is worried about the size of the school. And for listeners who might not know, Olin is a really small school. We have about 350 students in our entire student body. So this parent said that their son is worried about the size of the school. How has size affected others' student experience at Olin? And did anyone who was worried about the size enroll? And what were their, you know, thoughts and experiences related to that?
Yeah, that's actually a pretty relevant question. I know I definitely was actually a little concerned about class size coming into Olin, because it is very different from most of the other colleges. It is very small compared to pretty much anywhere else that people are going to be looking. And so I guess in high school, I went to three different high schools that each had very different like class sizes. The first high school that I went to had a class size of 16 kids. It was incredibly small. And after a year, I moved from that high school to the complete opposite end of the spectrum, where the class size that I had was around 1,000 kids per grade. And so I've kind of experienced a little bit of kind of the benefits and detriments of both those extremes. But my third and ultimately final high school that I went to, that ended up being almost exactly the same size as Olin. And so coming from that, I was a little concerned that some of the, I guess, some of the things that I didn't particularly like about having such a small class size, I thought some of that might transfer over to Olin. Like my high school had some issues where it was very clicky at times, and it was kind of hard to be able to, I guess, interact with. They were very, very tight-knit cliques, and it was kind of hard to escape that. And that was honestly my largest concern. And I honestly see next to none of that at Olin. Like, yes, the friend groups do form, and there are somewhat established, like, friend groups. And it's still not that hard to just, like, walk up to be like to someone and be like, hi, can I just talk to you for a little bit? And like, I don't know, it's not as, there aren't as many like hard boundaries in terms of friend groups and stuff like that. You can pretty much talk to anyone, and like everyone's really friendly. Like, yeah,
I feel like that's a great point, especially about, you know, thinking about cliques. Like, I think that's something a lot of people are concerned about. And, you know, I mean, I think that Olin has a really special culture, which helps with that. But also one thing to keep in mind is that anywhere you go to college, it's different from high school. People are growing and maturing, and this is an opportunity to kind of reinvent yourself in some capacity and think about, you know, what kinds of people you want to be friends with. And so I think any college experience is going to be necessarily different from high school, even if there are some things in common. So I think that's a great example of that.
Yeah. Also, like, at least for me personally, I kind of, having seen both of like the smaller class size and also like a larger class size, I kind of actually rather enjoy having around like 350-ish kids in the entire school. Like it's at least for me, and everyone's different, but like it strikes a nice happy balance for me.
When I was trying to choose between colleges, one big school I was comparing Olin to was kind of like my big local university. It was the kind of school where we would have dress up days in middle school where everyone would wear that college's gear because they'd be playing a football game. So, you know, it was the kind of school that I grew up with. A bunch of my classmates were going to, you know, it was the big school that everyone wanted to go to because it was, you know, nearby and we had grown up hearing about it. And I had to do a lot of comparing this, you know, university that I'd known so much about my entire life to Olin, which is something I had learned about the year before. And because it was nearby to me, I was actually able to go visit and kind of tour a day with one of my friends at that college after visiting Olin and all the candidates weekend things. And it was a really interesting experience because the entire time I was there, I found myself comparing it to Olin. Everything, Olin was my baseline for it, even though I had a couple different colleges I was considering. You know, it was always compared to Olin, and I was, you know, shadowing one of my really good friends, and he was, you know, he wanted me to go to his school because, you know, it would have been a really fun time and we would have had an excellent time. But, you know, at the end of the day, he was, you know, truly honest with me, and he's like, as much as I want you to come here, you're comparing everything to Olin. And, you know, it's because Olin for me was such a, you know, such a unique experience, and it was something I really wanted to be a part of. And as I was visiting this other school, which, you know, I had known everything about, I was trying to find an Olin in it, and there wasn't really an Olin in it, if that makes sense.
All right, this question will be for both of you, but Olivia Jo, we'll start with you. Do you have any general tips for students coming from out of state that will be attending Olin?
So my general big tip is that mail exists, whether that's ordering things online, you know, you don't have to bring everything from home, or sometimes, you know, you need to get stuff from home partway through the semester. I have to get medication that I can only pick up back in California. So priority mail shipping exists. That's really cheap. It's a really easy way to get things across the country for not that much money. Plus, you know, as my mom sends me a couple things I need, she'll always toss in a few extra treats, which is really nice.
I guess the tip that I would wanna know coming to Olin is, like, you really don't need, like, public transit also exists, which I know sounds stupid to say, but, like, I completely forgot about it. Like, I was worried, like, I'm not gonna have my car when I get to camp. Like, how am I gonna like get off campus and go do things? And Olin is like a, what, like 15 minute walk? No, not 15 minute walk, but like not a very far walk from a T-stop. And the T-stop is the public transit of the greater Boston area. And so, like, you can pretty easily either like walk, bike, get a ride to like the station and get into Boston within like an hour of leaving campus. Also, like, general accessibility of like the Needham area, you can walk to pretty much anywhere. And I personally really enjoy biking. I have my bike on campus. So you can also bike like tons of places around, and you don't like need like a car to get places.
Florian, do you want to share how you took a slightly unconventional route to travel to Olin when you first moved here?
Oh yeah, sure. I guess if you want a fun story to be able to tell people about how you got to Olin, you should drive from California to Massachusetts over the course of 45 hours. Me and my sister, we were coming out for a wedding that was happening about 2 days before I was supposed to move into Olin. And so it made sense for me and my sister, because my sister also goes to college up in New Hampshire. And so it made sense for us to kind of just drive out there and stay in a hotel for 2 days, so like my family could like help me move in and all that. But my mom doesn't really like long drives. So she basically went to me and my sister and was like, okay, so you guys need to get here by this date. You guys decide when you leave. And my sister and I were both like, we're procrastinating this, aren't we? Oh, absolutely. And so 2 days before, like, my mom was like, hey, this is the date you need to be here by. 2 days before that, my sister and I are like, all right, we're leaving, right? Yeah, we're just full sending this. And so over the course of the next like 45 hours, we drove from California out to Boston, alternating who was sleeping and who was driving. I brought my pillow. The passenger seat became like a dedicated like bed to just curl up in with a pillow. And we just went for it. I think we stopped two times for like a period longer than 15 minutes. Like, obviously we had to stop for like gas and stuff like that, but that was always just like, all right, gas, bathroom, like back on the road. We stopped once in Auburn, California for Thai food. And then we stopped one more time in Colorado to visit a family friend. And that was, I think, the only two times that we stopped that was like substantial.
That's quite a trip.
It was a lot of fun. It was a very interesting 2 days.
All right. Well, we greatly appreciate you, Olivia, Joe, and Florian for being on with us. I think you all gave us some awesome information, and our parents and those listeners will be greatly appreciative. So thank you so much for being on.
Once again, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
And now we'll hear from Sally Phelps. All right. Thank you so much, Sally, for joining us.
Hi, Dan. Nice to be here.
All right. So one of the questions we have for you is, can we get a good sense of where students go and what they make in terms of compensation once they graduate?
Sure. I could tell you a bit about that. So we've graduated 15 classes, and that brings our alumni count before this year to 1,156 alumni. And I do work really hard to stay in touch with them and often continue to help them even after they've graduated with their career journey. In terms of where do they go, a lot of them obviously get jobs with tech companies. So our top employers are the big companies like Google and Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, Apple. Those are probably our top 5 or 6. So our students do very well there, but that's not the only place they go. Several will go to work for automotive companies like Tesla, Ford, GM, Nissan, and the experience that our students get on the vehicle clubs really trains them beautifully for those kinds of jobs. Also, we're finding a lot go into robotics, and that's not a surprise. We have a terrific robotics lab, and a lot of our students are involved in that during their time at Olin. But a trend I'm seeing is so many more are not just interested in the big salaries at the big tech companies. They're more interested in working in healthcare. So we have more going into work for medical device companies. We have always had a few go to med school. So right now we have probably 15 or 20 doctors out there. We have lawyers out there. We have business executives. That's all in addition to our engineering grads. Other fields that I find they're very interested in is alternative energy or helping the environment. I shouldn't be surprised at this, but I'm always pleasantly surprised at how many go into education. We have a good number of college professors now. We have people working in education technology. We have people working on curriculum or even teaching in a high school. So that's something we're very proud of as well. And then we have a growing number, I would say, that work in public interest technology or civic technology. I have an early alumna who is working at the Pentagon on cybersecurity. So it's really a wide range. I often say if we graduate 80 seniors, they will take 80 different paths because we just never know what they might do. Let me hop over, if I could, to the grad school side. So a good number go into grad school for engineering STEM. And typically, it hasn't been a huge number. So again, if we graduate around 80, maybe 10%, 8 or 10 will go to grad school. This year, not surprisingly, because it has been a challenging year all around, we probably have twice that many that are going. So we might have 14 or 15 this year. Our students have a very good shot at grad school. Probably 30% of them go to either MIT, Stanford, Harvard, or Carnegie Mellon. So those are definitely our top graduate schools. And then we work with them closely in our group to help them with funding opportunities. The National Science Foundation's Graduate Research Fellowship, the NSF GRFP, is an award that we have had very good success with. And that's where a student will get completely paid for graduate school, like everything, tuition, room and board, to the school of their choice. So the NSF is a big deal. And this year we have 2 seniors that have been awarded that. So that's pretty exciting. And then the Fulbright is the other award that we do pretty well with. That will give a student a year to go abroad and work or teach or do research. And we have about a 1 in 3 chance of success with the Fulbright. So to the money question, great question. Our alumni do very well. Our seniors do well. Because we're so small, the way we measure this is we look at the last 3 years and what is the average of all of those graduates of the last 3 years. And that number right now is 87,361. So that's pretty good. When I look at other schools' websites, I see very few that are up there. Certainly in the software realm, many of these students are making six figures as soon as they leave Olin. So, but you know, what's interesting, I think, with our grads is it's really not, I find, about the money. They are so passionate about the work that they're doing. I really see them coming at it like, this is what I want to work on. This is how I want to help. Even the big tech companies that you think might just be big tech, a lot of them have assistive technology parts of the company, or you know, parts of the company where they really are, you know, doing good in the world. So and so that's the Olin data, and I would encourage you to check out the same information on other schools' sites. If you go to their careers page, they should all have results or outcomes. Even in the past year, I find it has been more challenging both for internships and for jobs, but our seniors are doing fine, and tech is still strong. So that's good news for our grads.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's always also interesting for me to think about, because I also work in the financial aid office. So I have a lot of conversations with families around this time of year about, you know, making a choice about what college to go to based on finances, which is a huge factor for so many families. And I think, you know, it's really easy for families to see the large price tag of colleges. Sometimes they think to, you know, look at the financial aid opportunities, which is really good. But sometimes what's missing is really thinking about that you are making an investment, and it's important to look at what your goals are for what you want to get out of that, whether financially, you know, in terms of job opportunities or salaries or other things you're hoping to learn or experience during your college education. So I love working with, you know, Sally's department and kind of helping families think about that investment really holistically, of like really thinking through, you know, what you're hoping to get out of your education. Even if you don't know, you know, what major you want to do or where you want to work, we don't expect you to know that.
It's a really great point, Alia. I mean, this is a significant investment for families. And the point I didn't mention is how big a part of our culture paid internships are. With every graduating class, we look at how many of them did an internship in their time at Olin. And with last year's grads, 100% had done at least one internship or research experience, and 91% had done two or more. So that's a big part of our culture. And those are paid internships. So there is the opportunity for students to be putting some money away for the coming year, you know, trying to help pay for tuition in that way. They probably get paid as interns anywhere between $18 and $40 an hour, depending on their skills, the geography, you know, what year in school they are. But they are paid internships, and that's a good opportunity too for them to put some money away.
Wow, that's incredible. And I think I'll also just point out that, you know, these outcomes don't come out of nowhere, right? So when you're looking at college options, another thing to look at is what support systems exist for students. So Sally's team in postgraduate planning, which it might be called different things at different colleges, you know, career services or whatnot, but most of them will have some type of department that works with students on planning for their future. And, you know, being able to look at what resources exist, what support systems exist, and then the other things that contribute to that, the type of curriculum, the type of relationship with professors, all of that helps determine, you know, where students are able to get these opportunities. So that's another thing to look at too.
Definitely. I mean, one of the things we love about being at such a small school is this time of year, with 1 month left in the school year, we are polling all the students, and we want to know who's still looking, We find them, we meet with them. We still have opportunities coming in every single day. So it may feel late, but there's a lot of students still interviewing and still landing internships. So, and we can do that high touch. And that's one of the things my team and I really love about Olin and about the job.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Sally.
That was great.
Thanks so much, both of you. Thanks for having me.
That's all for your questions. Now we would like to share 5 resources that we think will be useful to your families in the next final week of this decision. First up, there are admission offices. Most schools are hosting virtual events and sharing tons of resources right now to help you and your student learn more about them. Or you can contact them with specific questions. They want to help you make the best choice for you.
Nerd alert! Second is the common data set and consumer information. These include data that colleges are required to collect and publish on important metrics like graduation rates, postgraduate outcomes, and more. These are located on the college's website.
Third, there are your financial aid offers from the schools your child has been admitted to.
Fourth, you can check out the College Scorecard, which is a government tool that allows you to compare multiple colleges side by side on a range of metrics.
Last, and most importantly, there's your gut feeling and the fact that it's going to be okay. Trust you and your child's judgment. This concludes season 1 of It Takes a Village. Thanks for listening and good luck with your decisions.